Paul Gersio, our guest, your phone calls is another possibility, too, even though we believe, based on Merlin, that John Edwards, Democrat, Mitt Romney, Republican, those two may get their respective parties' nominations. What if there's some sleeper who pops up out of nowhere? I'll talk with Paul about that, 2012, and get ready for your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, what if we haven't looked at the sleepers, those politicians who may pop up later?
George, I got to tell you something. I always forget that you do a tease before you do the first batch of commercials. And I started to laugh and talk to you, realizing the mic wasn't open. because I'm sitting here looking at Mike Bloomberg's run and about to tell you, you know, there's one thing we forgot to mention here.
Okay. That's funny.
And that's Mike Bloomberg. And so, yes. If there was going to be a sleeper or a serious third party bid, I think we're looking at the right year.
All right. So that's a possibility. Yes. 2012. What does Merlin see for that strange year?
Well, what we did was we took the end date for the Mayan calendar, which is December 22, 2012, and we took that date, and instead of running it forward, we ran it backwards to see if it picked up any significant activities. And what we discovered, and you can see it I think I enclosed that. If I didn't enclose it, I believe it's also on the website. If you look at the years from about 2008, somewhere in late 2007 and on, in an ever-increasing sort of crescendo, you get this elevated mountain range peaking in or around the early part of 2012 and then dropping off to a kind of very deep valley and a break in the trend line right at the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. And what's interesting about that is that that's very similar, for instance, to the time tracks that we saw back in the late 80s that made us say, gee, do you suppose the Soviet Union's going to go out of business?
Right, right.
You know, it was timelines that looked exactly like that. In fact, if we ran you Romania and Czechoslovakia and, you know, all for that period of years, 86 up through about 90 or 91, and then compared it to this end days run, you'd see a mountain range that looks virtually identical. So there's absolutely some kind of shift going on at that point with a buildup of about 4 years, 3.5, 4 years, beginning in, let's say, late 07, early 08 or thereabouts, early 09, and lasting until about the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, where there is a definitive change. And I'm pretty sure on the website that Mayan calendar run is posted. If it isn't, we'll make sure it gets up there this week. You can look at it later. Again, if you look at this run for what we might call the end days run, for argument's sake, one of the things about it that's remarkable is that not only is this huge mountain range taking up the entire bottom six-year strip, but also there's nothing essentially of any significance anywhere else on that page. The rest of the 18 years, for the most part, is devoid of activity. So therefore, it reinforces something that we saw when we first started running these back in the late 80s, early 90s, and that is that there seemed to be a disproportionate number of time tracks that were showing enhanced activity in the years, say, post-07 and pre-2014, when we would have expected a smaller percentage showing that kind of activity. And the overage was sufficiently dramatic that we had to scratch our heads and say, well, what's that? Okay. And we've since, you know, sort of kept an eye out for what they are. Is it global warming? Well, probably that's part of it. And is it some kind of pandemic? Well, we certainly have that around. Okay, could it be a meteor strike or an asteroid incoming or something like that? Well, we've been certainly aware that that's a much bigger hazard thanks to people like Eleanor Helene, that we never knew prior to, say, 12 years, 15 years ago. It was always a hazard. We just didn't know it. Okay, it was always whirling around out there. You know, it's like the hurricanes that sea ships missed because they took a turn in a different direction, never knew it was there. We forget that it wasn't all that long ago that hurricanes struck with no real warning because we didn't have satellites to tell us where the hell this was. So there's been enormous changes along those lines, and when you take Merlin and you use Merlin as a kind of maybe a filtering device, like these presidential candidates, you're kind of putting them in piles of who looks likely and who isn't likely, strictly on the basis of what the trend line looks
right.
like. You're looking at it and saying, well, this one doesn't go on very long, so let's put it in this pile.
Throw that one out.
Okay, that's right. You know, and people say, it can't be that simple. It is.
Let's take some calls while we continue with this rapidly going hour. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, sir. Thanks.
How are you?
I'm doing good. The possible thing I've noticed, you guys are talking about patterns and history kind of repeating itself. And I was kind of wondering, with Barack Obama, could it possibly be something of an assassination and why he has his low activity?
Well, you know what? Now, that's very interesting you should mention that, because the very first time I heard anybody whisper that, and it's got to be in the back of everybody's head, but nobody, not one single newsman said anything about it until Steve Croft brought it up on 60 Minutes the other night. And Mrs. Obama said, well, you know, he's a black man. You know, he could catch it going to get a fill up at the service station. You can't live your life around that. That's paraphrasing, but that's basically what she said.
And also, his timeline picks up later on.
Right. Right. Now, the caller is saying, is that a possibility at a point where this trend line is showing the kind of thing it's showing? The answer is yes, it is.
Well, with sick humans out there, anything's a possibility.
That's right. And one of the reasons why you'd look at that is because if you look at Obama's run, right around the time where he's saying, I want to run for president, that trend line is changing from one kind of line into the other kind.
I tell
you, right now it's doing that. Okay. Now, if somebody were to look at the explanation of how you read these things, one of the clear things that we point out in bold letters is when the time model morphs from one kind of time model to the other, that point where that happens represents a critical moment, and you're going to see events fill in that vacuum. So, yes, is this one of those time frames or something? Yes, but probably if that kind of thing were to happen, it wouldn't take, you know, months and years. It would be something that would happen right in here someplace. You know, if the three-month window we're in now, maybe five-month window we're in, Not so much perhaps later, because later the line begins to establish. It's made up of the softer model, the more creative model, but the less structural one. But it is there, and you'll notice, George, that so is Hillary's. Hillary has the same kind of filigreed line, the non-structural line going on.
And see, they may stay strong in the Senate, right?
Well, I think I said to you at the end of the last hour that I believe that Hillary could easily be offered a post as the Senate Majority Leader and would probably be extremely effective.
She just went. Tony Blair falls off the face of the earth for years. This year.
Now you realize he's questioned for the third or fourth time now in this huge scandal of selling peerages over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, wouldn't that be an ugly way to end your political career? You know, it's, you know, that's like Spiro Agnew who ended his career having to plead no contender for essentially building fraud money whatnot, and that's just an ugly way to go. It's politicians, even Nixon, probably left in better shape than Agnew, say, left in, because that's just an ugly way to leave here. But Tony Blair has exactly the kind of thing right now where it's all collapsing. And again, we saw that back a few years ago and said that it was likely as early as probably the spring, maybe the summer of 07 at the latest. We don't think he'll last till the end of the year. But nevertheless, again, when you look at that trend line, it's clear. And by the way, the Tony Blair line does a very good job of capturing all of the significant career events since he was prime minister. So all of the times he stood for election, they're all clearly indicated there. It's remarkable, just remarkable. But again, it's one of those things that when you've seen enough of these and you realize, you know, these guys didn't cook this up to make it look like that, you know, that's the way it would have come off the assembly line before there was a Tony Blair.
First time caller line, you're on with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Elaine from O'Brien, Oregon. How are you guys
Elaine.
Doing?
Hi there. Good.
Okay, I have a question. I want to build 4 underground homes on my property.
Right.
And I was wondering if Paul gives financial advice or if he charges or...
Of course
we do. When
would
be a good time to build them?
Yeah, we run meters to do this. Yes, we do. now, the meter is not running tonight, but the meter does run.
Okay.
Yes. And earlier I mentioned to you that one of the things we got a lot of Coast to Coast listeners to call us about doing was picking dates to find windows to put their piece of property on the market, for instance, because as the market gets softer and softer, finding your buyer becomes harder and harder. And if you can utilize the technology that is going to put you and your buyer together with less grief than you might have had you done it sort of willy-nilly, that's a tremendous advantage and can save, you know, lots of grief and paying double mortgages and stuff. So, yes, we do that. And what we need for things like that, just so those of you who are thinking about something like that, your birthday, the date you bought the house, the date or closed on it, the date you originally put the deposit down, okay,
then
what kind of a window are you looking for in which to sell it? Is it immediate? Is it 6 months from now? When do you want to do this? And then we'll go looking for a date for you. And it raises the ante on this what we like to call coincidence index, sort of going up. Even if that's all it is, even if it's a system which gives you better access to groupings of coincidences, which if you can put together will put you and a buyer in the same place at the same time, then it's been worth doing.
Well, and sounds like my birthday would be a good day, because that's when I bought this place. That's when I put
not,
my money
well,
down.
Well, what we found about birthdays over the years, and George maybe can attest to this, although Gemini somehow usually managed to rise over this somehow. But anyway,
yeah,
the rest
Gemini.
Of us seem to be stuck with it. Your birthday and every 90 days after that around the year are going to be times when you are more vulnerable. And
okay.
You're more likely to make mistakes, bad choices, start wrong relationships that don't work, buy things that don't turn out to be what you thought they were going to be. That's not always true, but it's true way more often than you'd expect by chance odds. Okay, and eventually, if you kept track of the 4 windows around the year from your birthday, so in other words, what would be the seasonal points if your birthday was the first day of spring? When would the first day of summer be, and when would fall be, and so on, if your birthday was the first day of spring? That's how you compute this. And you'll find that if you avoid those periods to make more big decisions, you'll make fewer bad ones. You'll have fewer accidents, and you'll probably end up living longer.
Maybe Merlin can tell people where to stick those St. Joseph statues upside down in front of a house. That'll help it sell. Hey,
I love that. Yeah.
Fascinated by the Barbaro run, the Kentucky Derby winner, who was sadly put down 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But really fought like a son of a gun.
When we looked at it, we said, you know, he may be around for a while, but we're eventually probably going to lose him because the line drops out, and it dropped out as early as, I would think, I don't have it in front of me right this second, but I think it was something like as much as 3 or 4 months ahead of when they actually put him to sleep. But the fact of the matter is that a woman friend of mine who's a horseman tells me that he had done exceedingly well to have gone even that long with the condition he had. So it's unfortunate. If the horse was really in pain, that was probably the
humane thing to do. Yep. And it's just, for me, I'm looking at the chart 2007. Did you not just run it, or does that show that he died, basically?
That was, I didn't run it any further than that because I didn't think he was going to last beyond that.
Okay.
Now, in that stack, there's also some sports people. Ben Roethlisberger, for instance, you can see where
he's the quarterback.
Won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But look what happens in 06, late 06 and 07 and 08 and 09. It just sort of goes away. Okay. And Roethlisberger, who looked like the hottest thing, you know, on the field last year, They had a terrible time this year, and now even Bill Cowher has left finally after, 15 years as head coach for the Steelers. And yet you can see that if you look at Tom Brady's. Brady's dropped out, and you notice he didn't get past the playoffs this year or last.
Tiger Woods goes on forever.
Tiger Woods seems to go on for a while. You know, and one of the things that makes, and if you look at Tiger's, and you look at, say, Hillary Clinton's, you'll notice some similarities. What makes Tiger so successful is that he is doing what the best golfers, I think, always do, is it's entirely a game against themselves. You don't even exist.
I love how you did the O'Hare UFO case.
Yeah, very interesting. We ran it because George said to me, you know, this one's not like the others. And I said,
How so?
And he said, well, first of all, you got a whole bunch of airline employees, and they never go on record with these things. Okay. Well, that's true, because I was married to a flight attendant at one point, and I used to hear stories from Eastern pilots that, and I'd ask them, well, did you report this? And they said, no.
Most of all of them say no. Stay with us. By the way, Paul has a special offer for you. We'll talk about that and finish up by taking the rest of your phone calls. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's always simple to do as well. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. If you want to email the Merlin Men, it's projectmerlin@gmail.com. Two related websites, projectmerlin.com, TimeTracks with a K, TRAKS, TimeTracks.org. Well, if you're interested in picking up the book Worker in the Light, Amazon.com still has a few at a substantial discount, and it's available also at your favorite local bookstores. By the way, I'm going to be in Houston, Texas on March 2nd for a major event for our very fine affiliate there, KTRH. And you can come on by. It's going to be at the amphitheater out there. We'll have more information posted on the coasttocoastam.com website. But if you want to pick up a book, we're not going to have book sales there, but if you want to pick up a book in Houston and come on by, I'll do the best I can to sign it for you there. You know, my event goes on at, I believe it's 8:30 to 9:15, and then I got to skedaddle because I'm on the air in a couple hours right after that. So I'm doing a show out of Houston. So come on by. But if you want to bring the book Worker in the Light, I'll do the best I can to sign it while I'm there. Paul, can we time track end times from the Bible? Is that possible?
Well, I think that depends to some extent on whether Bible code and things like Bible code are actually valid. George and I have had lots of long discussions about that. I'm not satisfied that the coincidence, there's the word again, of events with names like Twin Towers and, you know, and Bush and Cheney, you know, kind of thing. I know that if you have enough monkeys at typewriters, you get the Gettysburg Address. I know all those things. I also, but there's something about Bible code that I'm not entirely willing to throw out. And if it's true, then you would be able to sort of take some of the stuff you get out of that and some of the stuff you get from us and kind of mix it together and get a little bit of the when and the what. Right now, all you get from us is the when, and all you get from Bible code is the what. Okay? Nobody's successfully put those together. If you could do that, you know, you could do some pretty fancy forecasting, I'll tell you. And I wouldn't mind that at all. But I'll tell you, one of the things, though, that always bothers me about these predestined kinds of things is that when you boil down any of this, whether it's astrology or what we're doing, it all starts with the idea that moments of time are not all the same, and if you'd come up with a formula for each moment, it would tell a story. Well, horoscopes are like that. That's what they are. They're frozen moments of time using planets and all this other stuff. And I'm convinced that each one of these systems, if kept within the confines of its operating principles, okay, in other words, if you don't fool with it and add in all kinds of junk, it will tell some very accurate and interesting stories, because like everything else, it's patterns bouncing against patterns, and that's the crucial, you know, underlying thing going on here. It's patterns bouncing against patterns, and any system that has an organized, lexicon like that will probably deliver up some useful information given the principles by which it operates. The problem is that there's often all kinds of, you know, religious overtones or social overtones or whatever it is mixed in. We've really tried to come up with something that's more like the multiplication table. It's non-denominational. You don't have to believe it any more than you have to believe, you know, timetables. Okay, try making them not work. Okay.
Yeah.
Stand by the ocean's edge and try and make the water not come in when it's out there and come in when it's not supposed to. Okay, I dare you. Okay, it's more in that realm. Okay, and I've always thought that if you could take something like this and what the insurance companies have locked away in their actuarial vaults, and things like Bible code, if you could reduce out of it the those things that couldn't possibly statistically have occurred on the same page. Okay, I mean, this stuff, you can get an idea of what, I mean, the gyrations through which you have to perform to get the information is relative to how accurate the information probably is. If you have to really whittle it down to make it fit into the hull, it probably is not true. One of the things I'd wanted to talk about in this half hour before we get off and give your listeners a sort of an interesting insight, George mentioned earlier in the evening that his introduction to this came by way of a professor who specialized in people born on February 22nd. Okay, well, George being George, that really did a job.
May 22nd, right?
May 22nd, yes, excuse me.
February 22nd, ironically. It's my dad's birthday.
Right day, wrong month. May 22nd, yes. I know George well enough to know that really did a job on him, because he's busy computing the unlikelihood of this, okay, given, you know, the number of possible days in the year and all this other stuff. So he would have known this is pretty goddamn strange, okay? And in my case, I actually have the 3-hour introduction to this stuff that caused me to get bitten by this. So it's never let go. Okay. And I did this show in New York in 1967. This is the next month in March, mid-March, is the 40th anniversary of doing this. I was going to college at Post College on Long Island. I was involved in their college radio station, and I convinced not only that station, but a whole bunch of other college stations up and down the East Coast to go and rent expensive, because they were expensive at the time, phone lines. Not the kind of stuff you bring in basketball games on, but the kind of things you could bring in the Philharmonic.
Yeah.
Okay. And they had lines run up and down the East Coast. AT&T did not get the final pair hooked up from one side of the East River to the other to make one of the key connections until 45 minutes before the show went on. And I had assembled a round table of real heavyweights. I mean, I was 20 and a half when I did this, George. I had, if I knew who the level of the caliber of the people I had on, I'd be worried about being able to pull it off now. Okay. At 20 and a half, I was stupid and didn't know what I was dealing with. And as a result, we got a fascinating 3 hours. John Campbell, who was the editor of Analog, and before that, Astounding Science Fiction.
Right.
One of the great
genius.
Old men of science fiction. The guy who gave Isaac Asimov his first writing assignment when he was 17. Campbell, who never did shows like this, got talked into doing 3 hours. It's the only 3 hours he ever did like this. Ever. And I have it. And Joe Goodavage, who later became a very famous astrologer, Bill Caldwell, who was a researcher in those years, you got to remember this is the late 60s, in LSD and psychotherapy and the possible applications of psychedelics to therapeutical process, and how that synesthesia that develops when you use some of those substances are very much like high states of psychic tunedness. Okay, that they're very that it's all coming from the same place. Anyway, I assembled a group of people around the table. Rod Serling was supposed to be there that night. He had to cancel because we had a snowstorm. He couldn't get out of Ithaca, but was at least there in spirit. And a fellow named George Andrew, who was an expert in things like Ouija boards. I'm telling you, I had 300 years worth of expertise sitting around that table that night. And it was just fascinating. And it was so interesting that other shows like that then were sort of put together by some of these non-commercial college radio stations, and that eventually became National Public Radio. We did this show about 3 years before NPR was formed.
That's fantastic.
What I wanted to do, because it's the 40th anniversary, I wanted to give your listeners exclusively an opportunity to get a copy of this thing, literally at our cost, and I want to get it into their hands because it's the thing that got me completely bitten by this, because Campbell, having a degree in physics from MIT, this was no, you know, wacko. This was a level-headed guy with a terrific education. And like Charles Fort, one of the great scientific gadflies of all time, Campbell championed things like Dianetics and the Hieronymus machine and dowsing. We taught people on this show, George, how to manufacture workable, professional dowsing rods so they could go out and actually try them themselves the next day. And this thing was, I still get excited thinking about that night, because we did stuff that night that nobody had ever done on radio in the New York area and up and down the East Coast ever before. Long John Nebel, who worked at WNBC in his later years, occasionally had people like this on, but never with these credentials. I made it absolutely essential that these guys had serious, dyed-in-the-wool, background and scientific credentials, and they gave us an evening of how some of this stuff happens, that to this day, some of the best explanations I ever heard came out of the group of people around that table.
How many of them are still alive?
None.
They're all gone.
I'm the only one. The only people involved who are still alive is myself and the college production people who helped me put the show together.
How do you find this CD, and then let's take final calls?
Well, the Lex has put a link up on your page tonight, and if they go to the Merlin homepage, if they scroll down just a bit, they'll see something that says special offer. If they read that and click to the jump page, it'll tell them all about this. And I'm telling you, I'm going to get you a copy of this. You're going to find this absolutely fascinating, because these are people who later became luminaries. Campbell was, even at the time. You might remember the science fiction movie. It's been done a couple of times. John Carpenter did the last one, called The Thing.
Oh, yeah. A classic.
That's Campbell's short story, a short story called Who Goes There? Okay. And Campbell was just a remarkable guy. He was tough to get along with. But, man, this guy knew his stuff. And you went out and tried the stuff he told you how to do, and it worked.
You got it.
It was amazing.
Wildcard Line, you're on with Paul Gercio on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I don't have a computer, and I would love to have the phone number before I get to what I'm calling about. Is it the Merlin Project?
Well, we have a toll-free number. Thank you for asking. I would have forgotten to mention.
I did.
So did you. Yeah. Yeah.
You all are relying too much on computers, by the way.
Right. Well,
on this program.
Well, you know, the thing is, and I've said this to George before, one of the things we all forget these days is that there is a bunch of you out there, maybe as many as 30 or 40%, who are not online.
That's true.
And you know, we never give out mailing addresses. We often don't give out phone numbers, and they get annoyed. I've gotten notes like, "What's the matter with you people?" Here's the toll free.
Okay.
It's 866
298 7688.
I'll give it to you again. 866 298 7688. And since let me take just a quick moment, I'll give you the mailing address too. The mailing address is Merlin Project. We're at 1241. That's box 1241 in Seabrook. It's all one word, Seabrook. It's New Hampshire, NH. The zip up here is 03874. One more time, Merlin Project, box 1241 in Seabrook, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And the zip is 03874. Uh-huh. So that's for those of you who aren't online and don't have a phone.
All right. And do you have a question, or is that it?
No, I have a question,
okay,
too.
Okay, go ahead.
But I did want to network the websites. It's themerlinproject.com.
It's projectmerlin.com.
Oh, just Project Merlin. Okay.
We actually own merlinproject.com, but we have been doing fancy footwork with Network Solutions, trying to get them to move it to a new internet service provider, and it's the paperwork's gotten bogged down. So, projectmerlin.com.
And the email for people I could network to
is merlinproject, one word, at gmail.com.
At gmail.com.
Joseph, we're almost out of time. You're going to lose your question.
All right,
go ahead.
I know. Well, what I wanted to do was affirm something you said about Bin Laden. And then if I had time, I wanted to ask you a question.
You won't have time for that, but
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, George, about 2 or 3 years ago, you said that somebody called you about and said almost the exact same thing I'm about to tell you. And it has to do with Bin Laden in the beginning, during the Tora Bora era. I was after that time, I was at a gathering, and I met a young man. We got to talking, who had been one of the first guys, one of those small groups of people going into those hills and mountains to find Bin Laden. And they found him, and they had him in their gun sights. And he, Tommy Franks, told them not to shoot him. So when you said, Paul, that you know, in the don't that this if you don't get him in the beginning, this will be a long struggle. That really did affirm that.
Right, and you know what? We had another opportunity between 04 and about late 05, 06, and blew that one as well.
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, we're too busy spending money on the wrong things.
First time caller, you're up in the moments we have. Go ahead.
Yes, is this me, George?
Yes, sir.
Okay, George, I want to ask you just a couple things, and to your, I'm enjoying this show.
Thanks.
That your guest is a gentleman. I don't understand with Bill Clinton having us with a surplus, and everybody wishing he could be president further than the tenure, how he won't be the candidate for his wife won't be candidate for president again. Two Clintons are better than one Edwards, it would seem.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'll tell you, if I were Hillary's campaign,
30 seconds,
you know what I would do? I would announce right now that Bill's my Secretary of State, and anybody that doesn't like him can go to their pants.
Well, and he's allowed to do that. He can do all of that.
You bet he can. And you know what? People would say, hey, that's not a bad idea.
It's, whatever it is.
And you know, it would keep him busy and out of trouble.
It's got to be, I guess, a position. Would he still be allowed to ascend to the presidency if it went through that kind of direction? I don't think he would.
The next person in line is the Speaker of the House, so it's not the Secretary of State.
Well, after the VP.
They are in the line of succession somewhere, but exactly where, I don't know. Because it's President, Vice President, and then Speaker of the House. So he would probably be able to serve as Secretary of State.
We'll have you back again, Paul, as we get close to some of the more activities as they occur. Thank you so much. That's Paul Gersio. Thanks to Dr. George Hart from the Merlin Project. Again, a lot of information up there on the website, and he just gave you the toll-free phone number. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.